The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Hey folks, I challenge you to think of at least one thing you no longer do that you wish you could. Do you miss like playing golf, maybe long walks with your spouse, sleeping through the night? Are you ready to start living without pain? My colleagues and friends, Hugh Hewitt, Dennis Prager, Mike Gallagher, have been talking about their own successful experience with Relief Factor, and you can add Eric Metaxas to that list. Relief Factor is changing the lives of tens of thousands of Salem radio listeners by reducing and even eliminating daily aches and pains. ReliefFactor.com is full of great success stories, and now I am on board. For just $19.95, Relief Factor is offering a three-week quick start that could help you live your life with little to no pain. Go to ReliefFactor.com to see testimonials from folks all over the country. I love reading them. Over 70% of those that try Relief Factor continue as a customer. Feel the relief and get back your independence and freedom from the aches and pains of everyday life. Go to ReliefFactor.com. Read the testimonies. I tell all my relatives to take it. ReliefFactor.com.
Welcome to the Eric Metaxas Show. It's the show that Mark Twain once called smarter than a blue jay, what can talk possum, and faster than a naked fat man riding a bolt of lightning. So here's your plain-spoken, homespun host, Eric Metaxas.
Aw, shucks, cut it out. Hey, folks, it's the Eric Metaxas Show. As you know, this is the show about everything. And when we say the show about everything, that really gives us a pretty broad range of topics, if you take everything seriously, and we do. Today, I have the pleasure of having as my guest Dr. Michael J. Murray. He's the president of the Arthur Vining Davis Foundations. And prior to that, he was a senior vice president of programs at the John Templeton Foundation. He's the author of a number of books. He co-edited a volume. We'll be talking about these. The Believing Primate. Well, we're going to get into that. The second volume is Nature Red in Tooth and Claw. All kinds of fascinating stuff. Michael J. Murray, welcome to the program. Great to have you.
Thanks for having me.
Well, there's so many directions to go. First of all, tell me and my listeners, what is the Arthur Vining Davis Foundation? Because there's certain things when you hear them, you realize I've heard that on PBS many times, right. You know, and with grants from the Arthur Vining Davis Foundations, you know. What is the Arthur Vining Davis Foundations?
So it's a foundation that was started in 1962 by Arthur Vining Davis, who was the founder and chair of the Alcoa Corporation for many years, almost 50 years. And we have five program areas, the three largest of which are in private higher education. So we give lots of grants to colleges and universities, public media, which is why you've heard about us on PBS.
Yeah.
We support a lot of Ken Burns' work, a lot of the children's television programming.
Yeah.
And the third major area is on interfaith leadership and religious literacy. So we're trying to see ways in which we can help the American population become more literate about religious traditions.
What? Yes, that's... It's kind of funny because these are all things I'm a little bit interested in. So I don't know where to start. You've written a couple of books. Maybe we'll start here. You wrote a book that it says it's the title is The Believing Primate, and you co-edited a volume which it interrogates the implications of empirical work on the topic of religious belief. Tell us, I mean, first of all, the title, The Believing Primate, it's a provocative title. What do you mean by that, and what is the essence of the thesis in that book?
Sure. So that book is looking at a collection of research that's been done really over the last 15 years or so, and what it's been looking at is the origin of religious belief. How does religious belief arise, and why is it so pervasive? And I think one thing that's interesting to anthropologists and to evolutionary theorists and to religious studies scholars is wherever you go around the world, across times and across cultures, there's religious belief. And so that when you see that, I mean, scientists, secular scientists especially approaching that topic, then want to answer the question, why is that the case? right? So it could be that, you know, people around the world believe that there are plants, and the reason they believe they're plants is they just open their eyes and they see them, right? But when it comes to these invisible agents that seem to populate our thinking about the world, we don't just open our eyes and see them. So how does this belief get started? And what many theorists began to suppose is that there must be some kind of natural disposition that we have to form these beliefs. Cognitive psychology has really changed over the last 50 years or so, to the point where now we think there are a lot of ways that our minds are configured, both in terms of, you might call it software, as well as actually hardwired beliefs that we have, and you find them recurring across time and culture. So the question is religion one of those things? And if so, where did it come from? And can we give an evolutionary account about how it arose? And
now, when you say can we give an evolutionary account, so I have to say right there, that's an interesting concept because you're presupposing evolution. I know that most people in the academy presuppose evolution, but it's a little complicated, first of all. Secondly, why wouldn't you conclude, at least initially, you might throw it out as an idea, that the reason religion is effectively ubiquitous in human societies is that there is some kind of a spirit realm. In other words, the question is in the details. We can't see it. It's invisible. But it's, you know, it's like if you're talking about atoms. We can't see atoms. We can't see it. But the point is, at some point, I've always been fascinated by the idea that we don't do this, right? I mean, you have Freud, you know, talking about this invisible thing, the soul, whatever it is. And he talks about, okay, we've got the ego, we've got the id, we've got the superego. He's really just blowing smoke, effectively, because there is no ego, id, and superego. But he finds it useful to create this model. And we can, you know, leave Freud for another time. But the idea is that when you're talking about the religious instinct that human beings have had, it would seem to me logical to think along those lines, to say that perhaps there is something beyond the material and the physical, and people have always known this, and they've always had pieces of evidence along those lines. And some people have taken in this direction, some people have taken in that direction. In other words, that'd be the first place I would go, but I'm not a secular academic.
Right. Well, it could be. And so it could be that belief in these supernatural agents is sort of like belief in plants, right? That perhaps we just see it in some way, or we reason to it from evidence that we all have. I think the problem with that hypothesis is that when you ask religious believers why they believe what they believe, generally speaking, they don't do that. They don't say, I just see it, or here's a bunch of evidence from which I infer it. They just find themselves believing it. Their parents told them that this was the way things are, and so they just are naturally disposed.
But is that any different from belief in gravity? In other words, if you say to me, do I believe in gravity, or you say to anybody, they work with gravity, they get that there's a force, but you ask them about that force, they don't have a clue.
Sure.
I mean, even the best academics who've studied gravity can barely tell us what it really is. And it seems to me it's that kind of a thing. In other words, it's not the sort of thing that you're going to be able to trot out reasons why, but you've just always operated with it because your forebears have operated with it.
Sure, it could be. It depends. So when you ask someone if they believe in gravity, I think they're all going to say yes. But when you ask them what they mean by that, they just mean, well, when I let go of something and it's not supported, it falls, right? So they're just – it is something that they infer from – things that they see with their eyes, which is unlike religious belief for most people anyway. And I think the other thing, just to speak to how this fits in with other research that's been done in the area of cognitive psychology, what we've learned is that we have all sorts of native dispositions to believe certain sorts of things. And really interesting experiments, even done with very young children, that looks like we have certain dispositions towards beliefs about biology, about physics, about mathematics, and so on. And so the question naturally arose, because religious belief is so pervasive, is religious belief like that, right? Do we have these natural dispositions? And if so, what accounts for it? And I think one thing that's a little bit different about religious belief from other types of belief is, generally speaking, it's costly. That is, it comes with certain sorts of costs. And evolutionary theorists, when they look at the costs that seem to be incurred by religious practices, automatically perk up. They want to know, well, how can it be the case that these costly behaviors persist when it looks like natural selective pressures would weed them out, right? So is there some kind of evolutionary benefit? And if so, what is it? And once we identify that, might that tell us a story or provide a mechanism by which dispositions towards religious belief emerge?
I'm fascinated by looking at it this way. I've never looked at it this way. So the idea that you would actually study that. So what have studies shown? I mean, people who've looked into this, what do we find? I mean, it is an odd thing to discover and to say, why is this there? Why is this so widespread?
Yeah. So I think there's pretty widespread agreement amongst those who study this topic, both evolutionary theorists and cognitive psychologists of religion, that human beings do have these natural dispositions to form beliefs in the existence of invisible agents, and in particular, invisible agents who are interested in our moral behavior in certain ways. In addition, it looks like we have natural dispositions to believe that we have something like an immaterial spirit or soul. Looks like we have that from a very young age, and it looks like it's found across every religious tradition. And so then the question is, well, where do these beliefs come from? What evolutionary pressures are there, if any, the word that's used is canalize, that is, it's like a canal that draws water as it comes down the face of the mountain, right? Is there something that sort of leads us in the direction of these beliefs, right? And so there are a few different hypotheses that are out there, and they're incompatible with each other. So according to one very popular view, I'll just give you one example.
Actually, hang on. Yeah. We're going to come back, and we'll get all three views. We're talking to Dr. Michael J. Murray, president of the Arthur Vining Davis Foundations. This is the Eric Metaxas Show. Stick around.
Feeling like I don't belong. Walking around some kind of lonely...
Guys, waking up over and over to urinate is not okay. But now, you can reduce those nighttime bathroom trips with the ingredients in Super Beta Prostate P3 Advanced. We're talking about less urges to urinate at night, less bathroom trips during the day, and better bladder emptying.
It's like taking three prostate supplements in one.
You can try a full 30-day bottle of P3 Advanced, free. Just pay shipping and handling. No strings attached, no obligations, and no commitments to buy. This is a 30-day supply, absolutely free. Call 1-800-424-8908. Super Beta Prostate is the best-selling brand in major retailers like Walmart. But for this no-strings-attached free bottle, you must call now. Call 1-800-424-8908. Don't miss out on this unprecedented free offer. 1-800-424-8908. 1-800-424-8908.
I'm pretty handy around the house, but now that I have kids, I don't want to spend my Saturday installing a toilet or fixing an air conditioner. But thankfully, there's HomeAdvisor. HomeAdvisor helps me find the best home pros in my area to handle any kind of project. You can read reviews of the pros, check their availability, and even book appointments online. And what my wife loves most is that HomeAdvisor is completely free to use.
Go to HomeAdvisor.com or download the free app to get started.
HomeAdvisor. Hi, this is Dennis Prager, and we just launched a new Pragertopia membership called Pragertopia Unlimited. Members can listen to any and all audio programs that are in the Dennis Prager store. That's over 400 programs to choose from. Show segments, talks, lectures, courses, even full access to all 5 books of my Torah teaching. For a limited time, an annual Pragertopia Unlimited membership is only $119. Join Pragertopia Unlimited today. Go to Pragertopia.com.
Hey folks, Eric Metaxas here. You have all helped build MyPillow into the amazing company it is today. Now Mike Lindell, the inventor and CEO of MyPillow, wants to give back to you, my listeners. You can get deep discounts on all MyPillow products if you go to MyPillow.com right now and click on the new radio listener specials. You know I use it. I rave about it. You can get deep discounts on MyPillow's mattress toppers. I love that. Bed sheets, so much more. For example, they're bringing back the buy one, get one free offer for the MyPillows. That's right. Buy one MyPillow, get another one absolutely free. Now, remember, all MyPillow products come with a 60-day money-back guarantee and a 10-year warranty. Just go to MyPillow.com, click on the new radio listener specials. You can get deep discounts on all MyPillow products, including the buy one, get one free offer for the MyPillows. You've got to enter the promo code ERIC or Metaxas. That's the key. Eric or Metaxas, 800-978-3057, 800-978-3057.
Your credit card companies love you. They love it when your cards stay maxed out. They love it when you only make minimum payments. They love it when you struggle. Why? Because they own you. And minimum payments mean maximum profits. Here's great news. National Debt Relief is now offering you free information on how to escape your credit card debt nightmare. If you owe more than $10,000 in credit card debt and are only barely making minimum payments, know this. You may not have to pay it all back. In fact, you may have the right to settle that debt for only a fraction of what you owe. National Debt Relief has helped thousands of people get rid of over $500 million of debt, and they're A-plus rated by the Better Business Bureau. Get the information you need for free right now before this offer goes away. Call National Debt Relief now and escape your credit card debt troubles. 800-314-4789. 800-314-4789. 800-314-4789.
And I'm here to talk today to Dr. Michael J. Murray, president of the Arthur Vining Davis Foundations. We're talking about some really fascinating deep stuff. You were just making a point. You said there were about three theories as to how it is that people postulate that religious impulses arise in human beings. So I think that's what you were just about to say.
Right. So one class of theories, religious belief is adaptive in a certain way. There's something about it that helps us to survive and reproduce. On another class of theories, it's not adaptive. It's just a byproduct of other features of our psychology that are adaptive. It's just a byproduct of that. And then the third is what's called mimetic accounts, where you look at the beliefs themselves, and beliefs and other cultural items can have their own kind of fitness advantages. So catchy tunes like the Bee Gees, perhaps.
Yeah.
We just have this – there's certain things about the way our brains are wired that lead us to find these ideas attractive or these songs attractive or these memes attractive, and we pass them along. So it's kind of like those beliefs or those memes have their own fitness about them. And so likewise with some hypothesize that religion is sort of like that. Our brains are just wired to kind of pick them up and pass them along. But I think the adaptationist accounts are really the most popular ones, and they'll point to phenomena like supernatural punishment, belief in supernatural punishment, as a tool that helps us to cooperate. So one of the biggest challenges any group of organisms face when they're interdependent is avoiding free riders, people who that is having each member of the group make its contribution to the group,
right,
and not free ride. But in order to do that, you need to make sure that there are mechanisms in place that keep people doing their part. Right, and keep them from defecting. And so one claim is that the postulation of these invisible moralizing gods who care about our behavior keeps us cooperating.
Okay, but that sounds to me, as a Christian believer, as tremendously condescending. In other words, this idea that we behave this way because it helps the species, and that these random genetic mutations over time have selected for people who are inclined to believe along these lines. And it just strikes me as so cynical about belief that I can't help but sneer back.
And in fact, that's why we put the book together, because I think on the one hand, people look at these accounts and they think that it's somehow demeaning to religious belief. Others look at it and they say, well, this explains it away, right? We don't have to believe these things anymore because we realize it's just a trick that our brain is playing on,
an
evolutionary trick, right? So let's talk about the first one first. You know, I think as a Christian, if you accept the idea that evolution is a good theory and provides us, generally speaking, with the right answer about how we emerged, as a Christian, you might ask, well, is there something about the way God designed the process to bring about creatures which are naturally disposed to believe in him? And I think, as a Christian, I think the answer is probably yes, right? There would be. And so what this is doing, you might think, is just articulating the mechanism, right? Here's a way in which God set up the natural world such that when human beings came into existence, they were going to develop these natural tendencies towards belief, that being an atheist was going to be hard, right? Now, the way we got there was because belief in supernatural punishment, perhaps, is a good way of helping to foster cooperation. And when we cooperate, we do better, we're more fit, we survive and reproduce. And so this tendency is spread to everyone. So I think it's not necessarily cynical. It might be a perfectly natural way for a Christian to think about this.
Well, if you're looking at things from along strictly evolutionary lines, why don't we see at least nascent kinds of buds of religious instinct in the higher primates that are not human?
Yeah, that's a good question. Of course, there may be some primate relatives of ours that did hold religious beliefs, like Neanderthals and Denisovans and some of these other...
Well, no, I don't think they count. In other words, okay. I think that I would put them in the category of they're effectively humans. Now, whatever, maybe they're not, technically the same kinds of humans, but you would want to find... something closer to what we think of as an animal, right? Whether it's an orangutan or, the great apes, to try to figure out where does that leap occur? Because
right.
When I think of Neanderthal, I think of somebody who can use tools, whatever. I don't really think of a Neanderthal along the lines. They're basically
sure.
on this side of a divide.
Okay. All right. Yeah, so why don't we see it in other primates that are alive today, other non-human primates? Some people actually think that we do. I think that that's false, maybe even crazy, but some people do think that. I think that the reason is because there are other cognitive tools that you need in order to be able to have religion, and they simply don't have those cognitive tools. And so they don't need them. But so part of the reason is as the human population size grew, we became much larger groups than any other primate. And so we needed to innovate certain tricks, essentially, that would help foster cooperation. That's really that's the way this theory works.
Well, so the theory is postulating that these things didn't evolve until we were in huge groups. But at what point historically, or actually prehistorically, at what point chronologically do we become members of these big groups? It strikes me that that is a relatively recent thing.
It is. And so there's actually been some really interesting research done on mechanisms that groups of organisms use to help secure cooperation. And there are all sorts of things that other organisms do to secure cooperation. Other primates, one thing that they do is they spend a lot of time grooming, actually. And but when you reach a certain size,
right.
a certain size,
right.
this doesn't work anymore.
Right.
And it looks like there's even a number. Like once a group gets above about 150 in size, you need other mechanisms than grooming and these other sorts of techniques. And it's at that point, it looks like, that religious belief begins to emerge. And again, the theory on sort of a secular way of looking at this is that it's an evolutionary innovation that allows cooperation to continue.
Okay,
now, we
so
needed other things besides just group size.
Okay.
And other organisms don't have those other things.
But there's here's another question. If you look at, now maybe I'm overgeneralizing, but it seems to me that what religion is at its heart is an acknowledgement by virtually every religion that there is some gap between us and some ideal. There is an acknowledgement that there's a gap and that there's a sense of guilt about that gap, that we need to do something, and religion is that something, to bridge the gap between us and the divine, to do something to deal with that the abyss between us and whatever it is that's out there. And so every religion deals with that differently. And I would argue as a Christian that the Christian faith is the first case. It's the end of religion in the sense that God does something about that gap rather than our efforts to do something about that gap. He says, stop, I'll take care of it.
Right.
And he sends Jesus. But isn't that a common feature of religions, that it's about addressing that? And then wouldn't thinking about this force us to ask, why do humans universally have that sense of guilt, that sense of division between themselves and something better?
I think so. And not to push this explanation farther than it should go, but I think actually that fits right into this theoretical framework, where the idea is that there are certain moral ideals. There are high moral ideals that we are supposed to realize. And these moral ideals are something that we want to, that when we realize them, we are good at cooperating with one another. We're good at displaying those features of behavior that allow us to survive and reproduce as a group. So having these very high moral standards and ideals is something that fits well within this theory. And the idea is that, I think as a Christian, God put in place processes that brought it about, that we have this disposition towards these moral ideals, in part because they foster cooperation, but in part because that's what godliness is about, right? And but it's also true that when it comes to looking at the specific details of religion, we're likely not going to be able to give an evolutionary explanation for all of those things. So the idea is this is just a way of explaining the general disposition we have towards a certain class of beliefs. But when it comes to things like belief in the Trinity or belief in the Incarnation or various doctrines of atonement, we're not going to be able to give evolutionary accounts
of that. I would certainly think not, no. But I do think that another thing that would bear looking into is the universality of belief in spirits. And I just find it fascinating that no matter where you look on the globe, that people have always had these beliefs in spirits. And you find there are parallels. And, you know, it's like looking at something invisible but being able to pick up certain traits and things that give you clues as to the nature of this invisible thing. Is that something that folks have looked into?
For sure. So Yale psychologist Paul Bloom has written a book recently called Natural Born Dualists. And his claim is exactly that we have, like these other types of beliefs I've been talking about, we have these natural dispositions towards belief in some kind of supernatural or immaterial soul. And he tells a story about his young son, and he was essentially doing an experiment on him, and they were talking about an alligator eating a mouse. And so the alligator eats the mouse, and he asks his son, well, what do you think happens to the mouse? And he says, well, you know, he gets chewed up, and he asks him questions like, well, is the mouse hungry anymore? And the answer is no. And he says, how does the mouse feel? And he would tell him how it feels. And what he was trying to display through this is that when it comes to the physical features of the mouse,
right,
his son realized, yeah, when he gets eaten, his physical features go away.
Right.
But his mental features persist.
Oh, really?
Which shows that you've got this kind of psychological division, right, between the physical
okay,
and
I
wanna, mental.
Okay, we're going to pursue this when we come back. Folks, I'm talking to Dr. Michael J. Murray. It's the Eric Metaxas Show.
With SRN News, I'm John Scott. President Trump insisting that his call for Ukraine to investigate Joe Biden is not politically motivated. The president says the concern about the 2016 election and Joe Biden centers on corruption and not politics. European officials say they hope to engage the U.S. in talks on the new tariffs it has imposed on the EU, but are ready to respond with taxes on American goods if needed. The U.S. trade deficit widened in August for the first time in 3 months as exports increased, but imports increased more. The Commerce Department says the gap between what the U.S. buys and what it sells abroad rose 1.6%. The U.S. employment rate fell in September to a new five-decade low of 3.5%. President Trump says the U.S. is outperforming other countries. That includes China. This is SRN News.
We have reached the age where things just cost more.
Cars, mm-hmm, phones, mm-hmm, life insurance.
Your blood pressure is up.
Your weight is up.
You're one to talk.
I have type 2 diabetes, so I'm getting dinged just like you.
Thank goodness for Big Lou.
Big Lou!
Big Lou can get term life insurance rates for a 50-year-old male with type 2 diabetes or high blood pressure, or maybe he's on anxiety meds,
mm-hmm,
for just around $200 a month for $1 million of coverage.
Oh, you got to say that again.
Go ahead.
Okay, I'll say it. Big Lou and term provider could get a 50-year-old man, a little dinged up, $1 million in life insurance for around $200 a month.
Call Big Lou.
Big Lou.
He's like you. 800-444-9336. That's 800-444-9336.
Don't put it off. If you're overweight, diabetic, have high blood pressure, you gotta call Big Lou.
Gotta.
800-444-9336.
Write it down.
800-444-9336.
The backyard's looking great, Rob.
Thanks, man. I was planning on adding a deck, too. Know any good contractors?
Why don't you just ask HomeAdvisor?
Home what?
HomeAdvisor.com. You just tell them about your project, and they match you with local pros that can do the job.
Nice. Now, how much does it cost?
Oh, HomeAdvisor's totally free to use. Plus, you can read customer reviews, check pricing, and book appointments for free.
What's the website again?
HomeAdvisor.com. Or just download the free HomeAdvisor app.
HomeAdvisor.
Are you a responsible person who finds yourself growing deeper in credit card debt? Then get ready for a toll-free number that will put you on a path to financial recovery. Trinity Debt Management will consolidate your accounts and work with your creditors. You'll save thousands and become debt-free for keeps. If your debt has you down, we should talk. Call Trinity at 1-800-990-6976. 1-800-990-6976. 1-800-990-6976.
Flows and flows of angel hair, ice cream castles in the air.
Hey, folks. Ice cream castles in the air? Really? Hey, we're talking to Dr. Michael J. Murray, president of the Arthur Vining Davis Foundations, and we're talking about some wonderful things here. You just were citing the work of, I guess it's Paul Bloom at Yale.
Correct.
And he talks about a kind of natural dualism that we have and that we always think of ourselves as having souls or something like that. But what I meant in leading up to that was that it seems to me that people not only think that, but that we also seem always to postulate the existence of a spirit realm of, right, of beings, not like alligators and mice and humans, but beings that don't we don't see, or if we see them very rarely. We see them in visions, we see them in dreams, but we tend not, or maybe a shaman sees them, but we don't typically see them. Maybe children see them. You find this everywhere, whether it's leprechauns or fairies or all kinds of spirits, evil, good. That strikes me as fascinating just for study. The idea, right, is, why do human beings? So I don't know if you were going to go there, but that's a...
It is true that that's the sort of belief that's found widely across times and cultures. And again, there are different hypotheses about what might explain this. So one very commonly accepted explanation is that human beings have something that's oftentimes called a hypersensitive agency detection device. And what that means is that when we're in a natural environment, we have to be worried about things like predators and other organisms that might be out to get us. And so it's good to be on the alert when you see a rustling in the bushes or you hear an unusual non-natural sound, right, that you should assume that there's something there. And there's lots of stimuli in our environment that seem to trigger this detection device,
right,
when there's no obvious cause,
right,
you know, the laundry blowing on the line or the rustling bushes. And what the advocates of this view claim is that when there is an event like that that occurs with no obvious visible cause, we naturally default to hypothesizing some invisible cause.
Right.
And that begins to populate our thinking and our world with these invisible agents.
What? Okay. I want to flip the channel just a little bit, because there's another book called Nature Red in Tooth and Claw, which you wrote. It relates to the topic. It deals with the problem of evil, what we call theodicy, and you relate it to the topic of animal suffering in an evolutionary context. I'm not clear on what you mean by that, but it sounds fascinating.
Sure. So actually, this topic came to my attention when I was teaching a senior seminar at Franklin and Marshall College on the problem of evil. And one of my students said, well, look, Dr. Murray is a Christian. Like, how do you explain a world that's filled with so much animal suffering? And I was just quickly going through my head of the various, you know, explanations for the problem of evil that Christians provide, and none of them really work in
well,
the
I
case
think,
of animals.
Well, I'm understanding what you mean. In other words, when we're dealing with the problem of evil and somebody says, okay, why do people get sick? Why do people die? Why do people suffer? We can very easily say, oh, it's because we're fallen and we sort of deserve it on some mega level, some huge level. There's suffering for us. But then the question, of course, what about innocent animals?
That's right.
They didn't fall in the fall. I actually would say that they did, to some extent, they did fall in the fall, that when the fall occurred, all of creation fell. I don't think that there will be tarantulas in heaven. I don't think that there will be blood-sucking bats in heaven. So, and also no tattoos, but that's another story. But so But anyway, this is right. The issue you're exploring.
That's right. So, you know, oftentimes Christians will say, well, when we see evil in the world, it's a result of misuse of our free will. But when you look at the case of animals, it doesn't look like they have free will. And in some cases, their suffering doesn't seem to be connected in any direct way to their free will. Again, it might be the result of a fall. I'll get to that in just a second. But anyway, I thought there's got to be some literature on this. So I went and read everything I could find, and there actually wasn't. There wasn't any literature on this subject.
You decided to create some.
So I thought, well, somebody needs to think this through a little
bit.
So I wrote this book, and really what the book does is lays out a variety of different theodicies or explanations that Christians could give for why God would permit non-human animal suffering. And one of them is the fall. Of course, the biggest challenge there is it looks like human beings come on the scene fairly late in evolutionary history, and so there's a lot of pain, suffering, death, predation, extinction, and so on that goes on before we're on the scene. So if you want to invoke the fall, you have to tell some story about how this fall that happens very late in the game has these backward causal effects and somehow.
Well, actually, couldn't you postulate that the fall happens outside of time? In other words, I think it really gets tricky when we're talking about the fall. We're talking about something that occurred in a realm, I would argue, that is outside of time. In other words, for us to be in perfect communion with God and for everything else to be happening that's described in Genesis' account of Eden, it's outside of time, and it happens. I can't say how I would explain this with regard to, you know, time, but it's something that happened before time, and so. Is there any way of accounting for if you're a scientist, an evolutionary scientist, it seems that would be a difficult thing to postulate.
Well, I think even if you're not a scientist, it's still troubling because, you know, I'm not sure what you think about Adam and Eve. I'm still an advocate.
I'm all for them. I'm related to them.
I think you are as well. I'm still an advocate for a belief in historical Adam and Eve. When did they exist? I don't know. Sometime between 100,000 years ago and 6,000 years ago. But there was a time before that.
But there was suffering before that. Okay.
That's the problem.
Huge, huge topic. We're going to be right back. Folks, talking to Dr. Michael J. Murray with the Arthur Vining Davis Foundations. We'll be right back. Hey folks, Eric Metaxas here. There's something you all need to know about Relief Factor and about Pete and Seth Talbot, the father and son owners. As you know, they're on a real mission to help as many people as possible get out of pain, and they've been a consistent sponsor of the show for several years. In radio, sponsors come and go. They may even stay for a year or so. It sounds like they're doing super, and then they're gone. Well, not so with Relief Factor. Pete and Seth are consistent year after year, and that's because tens of thousands of people are now taking Relief Factor every day for their back and neck pain. I'm one of them. Shoulder pain, knee pain, hip pain. And they are now in less or no pain at all. All these people, it's as simple as that. It works. That's why I've joined Pete and Seth on their mission to help you get out of pain today. And the first step is to order the 3-week quick start pack for $19.95. If you're still skeptical, remember, it's not just me. There are tens of thousands of other nice people who would happily tell you to give it a try. It can be done. It could be at your door in just 2 to 3 days. Go to relieffactor.com. Remember, relieffactor.com. It works. It works. University professors have been fired for their Christian views. Boys are taking awards away from girls because public schools are allowing boys to compete in girls' sports competitions. Bad laws are forcing creative professionals to create and express messages through their art that directly contradict their deeply held beliefs. Hey folks, this is Eric Metaxas. You may not believe it, but these are actual freedoms being fought for in the courts by my friends at Alliance Defending Freedom. ADF fights these pivotal court battles for free, but they cannot do it without your help. Your tax-deductible gift of $100 will help Alliance Defending Freedom protect your freedom and the freedom of your children and grandchildren. Give securely by clicking the Alliance Defending Freedom banner at MetaxasTalk.com. That's the Alliance Defending Freedom banner at MetaxasTalk.com or call 800-556-2770. That's 800-556-2770. Please help Alliance Defending Freedom today. Hey folks, Eric Metaxas here. As you know, following Christ is a lifelong pursuit. It requires perseverance, and practice makes permanent. A new study Bible for today is the third edition of the Life Application Study Bible. Read by more than 20 million people, it's the best-selling study Bible in the world. The Life Application Study Bible is not a Bible for a season. It's not for a New Year's resolution. It's not just for hard times. It's a Bible for all times, with more than 10,000 newly updated and expanded notes, charts, maps, timelines, profiles, and more. The Life Application Study Bible is the most complete single-volume Bible ever compiled. It is just what you need to apply biblical teaching to your everyday life. As you train for the race God calls each of us to, the Life Application Study Bible is the companion and coach you need by your side every single step of the way. For who you were, who you are, and who God has called you to become for all times. Learn more at lifeapplication.com. That's lifeapplication.com.
A few years ago, my wife and I couldn't find great bedding in any stores, so we founded our own company. I'm Scott Tannen, the founder of Boll & Branch, the world's most comfortable sheets. My wife Missy and I spent months developing the super soft organic cotton fabric we're now known for. Since then, we've helped millions of people, including three U.S. presidents, get a great night's sleep. You could compare them to $1,000 sheets, but we sell them for a fraction of the price because spending that much on sheets is bonkers. Right now, check out our luxury flannel collection. It sells out every year. That's because Boll & Branch flannel is cozy but breathable. Cool sleepers and hot sleepers all love it. You can try us risk-free for 30 nights, but I think it'll only take one to convince you. And right now, get $50 off at BollandBranch.com with promo code CALM. That's spelled B-O-L-L and Branch.com. Promo code CALM. Save $50 at BollandBranch.com with promo code CALM. BollandBranch.com. Promo code CALM.
Hey folks, it's Eric from Taxes Show talking to Dr. Michael J. Murray, president of the Arthur Vining Davis Foundations and author of the book Nature Red in Tooth and Claw, Oxford University Press. So we're talking about theodicy with regard to animal suffering, and you were just saying something.
I was saying it's a difficult problem, actually, I think, for Christians to figure out why God would allow these innocent creatures to suffer.
But you see, this is the thing. This is why I love these conversations, because you don't know where they might go. Is it in fact possible that these creatures are not entirely innocent? In other words, when we say that they're innocent, why are they innocent and a newborn baby is not innocent? We talk about original sin. We talk about original sin being transmitted. I guess Augustine said it, you know, from person to person genetically. But if we're talking about something like original sin, why does it need to be transmitted that way? Why can't it be something? If all of creation fell, which is what the scripture says, isn't it possible that innocent animals share in the guilt that newborn babies share in? If all of creation fell, why are newborn babies on the hook, right, but animals are not? In other words, if all creation fell, right, if I have to pay the price for what my forebears in Eden did or didn't do, why shouldn't all of creation have to pay the price? And of course, we're talking about things that are far beyond the realm, I would guess, of evolutionary science to discuss.
Sure. Yeah, I mean, it's hard to solve one really difficult problem by going to another really difficult problem with original sin. But I think there are two things to say about that. The first is the problem I raised earlier, which is it looks like there's a lot of animal suffering going on before human beings even come on the scene.
Right.
So if you want to explain it in terms of some wrongdoing on the part of Adam and Eve that then has this radiating effect, that works, but only after a certain point. And then the question is, what about before that point? But the other is, you know, I think one worry I have about fall theodicies or explanations for animal suffering is they propose a kind of what I call fragility in creation, where somehow the wrongdoing of this one individual or this pair of individuals has this effect that spreads across the entire creation and contaminates not just the future human race on this account,
right?
But everything. And the question then is, why would a good creator create a natural world that's so fragile in that way that this one individual's wrongdoing then victimizes these poor innocent creatures?
But those are just degrees of fragility. In other words, why should there be any fragility to it, and why should there be any, you know, in other words, whenever we hold up this idea of a good God, we are judging that good God. In other words, we're saying, why would a good God do X or Y or Z? And we have to really frame our notion of the good according to what the Creator says about himself. In other words, the idea that he would create a creation that is not subject to that kind of suffering, you'd have to say why. In other words, I you know, if we can go backwards and say, why should any child have to suffer? You know, if I were God, I'd say, well, I wouldn't, you know, I wouldn't have created like that. But if a child has to suffer, or if a child can get cancer, what difference does it make if a squirrel is in pain? It's all part of the same conversation.
Sure. Well, I think, you know, Christians have claimed that God is love and that God loves all of God's creation, that God's creation is good. And then we just have to ask ourselves, well, does that seem true? Does that ring true to our experience? Is this in fact the way a loving creator would create, would treat the creation that he's created? And of course, for the atheist, they say no. They're the ones who are raising this challenge of the problem of evil.
And it's a good challenge.
It's a good challenge. But even for us, we have to ask, you know, do we think it's consistent with how we understand the notion of love, that these innocent creatures, completely disconnected from any human beings or any human wrongdoing, are experiencing pain, suffering, death, predation, extinction, all of these bad things? How could that be the case? What would justify that? And so I think it's worth thinking about, right? And it may be the case that we just don't know what the answer is, and we just have to trust in God's goodness. But at least for those who are skeptical about Christian belief, it's okay for them to wonder, and what we can do to give them
an answer. It's not only okay to wonder, but we all should wonder. In other words, I think that these are good questions. I think oftentimes atheists raise spectacular questions, and I would say to those who aren't asking those questions, why aren't you asking those questions? Yeah. You should at least be troubled by it. So I don't care where you come from.
So now we have to ask, what's the answer?
Yeah.
And so I'll give you some candidate answers.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah.
The first thing, just very quickly, I think, and this is part of the book that's gotten a lot of discussion and got me into a bit of trouble, frankly, is we have to ask ourselves, what is animal experience like in the first place? So if what we're worried about is pain and suffering, we have to ask, what is pain and suffering like if you're a toad or a cat or whatever? And part of the problem is we don't know. We don't actually
know. We can't extrapolate from our own suffering. Why should we make it such a big question? Why? I don't understand.
Oh, why can't we? Well, because there's a couple reasons. First of all, anatomically, we're very different.
We're not that different. I mean, if a cat screams in pain, I get it. Like, it doesn't matter that I don't have whiskers, and I don't.
Right.
But the question is, why is that even an issue? That strikes me as a non-issue, or it's an issue, you know, for an academic that you can have some fun, but ultimately that's not the big issue.
Well, we can pass on if you like. I mean,
we don't have that much time, so we may as well pass on. Go ahead.
So once we accept that this phenomenon is real, then the question is, what explains it? And so it could be that there's a fall, a satanic fall. Perhaps there's some satanic fall that explains why animals experience pain and suffering. But there are other possibilities. So one thing we know is that if you're an organism that acts intentionally.
And I am.
You are.
Yeah.
And so are other non-humans.
Right.
They act intentionally. We need some kind of a mechanism that wards us off of damaging ourselves when we're trying to accomplish some goal that harms us. Right?
Okay. So the idea is that animals can learn from suffering?
And avoid bodily injury. Right. If they need to avoid bodily injury. And the question is there some other mechanism aside from pain that would allow them to avoid injury when they're trying to accomplish something, but doing it in a way that's likely to cause them injury?
Right.
And the answer is probably not. Attempts to try to create alternative mechanisms to prevent bodily injury that don't involve pain have all failed. And so it looks like it may just be necessary. If you're going to have organisms that are capable of engaging in intentional behavior, as all these many non-human animals are, that they have to have a pain mechanism. So it's for their good, even though it does require that they have some suffering.
Right.
It's for their greater good.
Okay.
That's one possibility.
That sounds plausible. But if I were not a believer in God, that's a black mark against God. You'd think that he could do better.
Well, you might. It's just that when we experiment with alternatives, it looked like none of them work.
But we're just you know. We're talking about God. He should be able to do better. So that, to me, that's a conundrum.
I think at this point, it's up to the atheist to give us a better story, right? We can look at alternatives that we've tried. None of them work.
If I see what you're saying.
Tell us what it is, right?
Now
it looks like this.
We're
going
to go to another break. We have one short segment left with Dr. Michael J. Murray of the Arthur Vining Davis Foundations. Important stuff, interesting stuff. Stick around.
Guy, guys, waking up over and over to urinate is not okay. But now, you can reduce those nighttime bathroom trips with the ingredients in Super Beta Prostate P3 Advanced. We're talking about less urges to urinate at night, less bathroom trips during the day, and better bladder emptying.
It's like taking three prostate supplements in one.
You can try a full 30-day bottle of P3 Advanced, free. Just pay shipping and handling. No strings attached, no obligations, and no commitments to buy. This is a 30-day supply, absolutely free.
Call 1-800-424-8908.
Super Beta Prostate is the best-selling brand in major retailers like Walmart. But for this no-strings-attached free bottle, you must call now.
Call 1-800-424-8908.
Don't miss out on this unprecedented free offer.
1-800-424-8908. 1-800-424-8908.
With SRN News, I'm John Scott. President Trump says the congressional Democrats' efforts to impeach him will come back to haunt them in November 2020.
I really believe that they're going to pay a tremendous price at the polls. And we saw the first glimpse of it 2 weeks ago in a great state, North Carolina. We saw a great glimpse of what's going to happen.
Mr. Trump spoke to reporters on the White House lawn prior to departing for Walter Reed Hospital in Bethesda, Maryland, to visit with wounded soldiers. He says Republicans have been very unified in the face of an impeachment process, but he acknowledges that House Democrats do have the votes to begin a formal impeachment inquiry. The unemployment rate dropping to a 50-year low of 3.5% in September, employers adding 136,000 jobs. The Dow ahead 357 points, the NASDAQ up 102. This is SRN News.
Are you a stock or options trader looking for real trading strategies that you can use immediately? Hi, my name is Scott Bauer, CEO of Prosper Trading Academy, and I'm on a mission to become the number one options coach in America. I'm a former vice president at Goldman Sachs. I have over 25 years of options trading experience, and right now, I'm giving away my most famous options guide with over 20 unique options strategies that I use every day for free. You can't buy this guide anywhere. To claim your free options trading guide, simply call 855-892-2307 now and mention my name, Scott Bauer, and we will rush you the guide. Call 855-892-2307 and someone from my options team will help you get this guide in your inbox as quickly as possible. Call 855-892-2307 now and start learning to trade the right way. Call 855-892-2307. 2307, prosper with options.
Stocks and options trading involves financial risk and is not suitable for all investors.
I know I stand in line until you think you have the time to spend an evening with me.
That's the chairman of the board. I'm Eric Metaxas, and I'm talking to Dr. Michael J. Murray. Fascinating conversation. We just have a few minutes left. Your book is Nature Red in Tooth and Claw. We talk about animal suffering, and it's a fascinating thing to speculate about. I mean, theodicy, not to be confused with theodicy by Homer, theodicy is one of those questions that it really precedes everything. You're talking about the nature of reality, and suffering immediately comes into the question, and so you are literally the first person to write on this. I mean, that's what academics, I guess, are supposed to do, right? They're supposed to find some field that hasn't been explored and explore it. It's kind of wild to think that this field hasn't been explored.
Well, I mean, I won't say I'm the first. And interestingly, there was a lot of discussion about this amongst Christians in the late 19th century, immediately after Darwin. They were wrestling with this topic. But when evangelicals began to reject evolution in the early part of the 20th century, the conversation just went away. And I think as Christians have begun to think through evolutionary questions again, they've started to reengage this topic, recognizing how much pain and suffering and so on there was before human beings came on the scene. So, so the last thing I'll say is the last explanation I explore is whether or not, as God sets up the creation with the goal of having organisms that manifest the divine image, us, come on the scene, there needed to be precursor organisms that had a certain level of conscious awareness that are that precede us, right? Evolution doesn't evolution proceeds gradually, and so in order to get organisms that have the full-fledged cognitive and psychological capacities that we had, there had to be precursors that had them
but,
to a lesser extent.
But then extent. Wouldn't you ask, if God is God, why would he need to use the evolutionary process?
That's true. So
I mean, if he could avoid all this suffering without using the evolutionary process, you'd want to ask God, what is it about the evolutionary process that's so necessary?
That's right. And, you know, when you ask young Earth creationists, many of them object to the evolutionary account for this very reason, right? They say all of this waste, death, predation, suffering, and pain in the evolutionary, it just can't be true because God wouldn't create like that. God would create immediately. So it's interesting when you look at the history of Christian thought, Christians have looked at God's interaction with nature in a variety of different ways. Some see God as an engineer, right? Some see God as the loving parent. But one theme that stretches throughout Christian theological history is God as the designer. And so the question is, does it make sense to think that God created a world, implemented certain laws, and allowed that to essentially build itself, a machine-making machine that God created as the grand engineer? And if there's something valuable about having a creation like that, which is something not everyone agrees with, but if there is, then perhaps evolution manifests that, right? It's a machine-making machine that's created by God. And in the late 19th century, interestingly, many Christians were reflecting on the Industrial Revolution and machine-making machines that they were creating at the time to produce rugs and things like that. And they were postulating that the evolutionary story was something along that line. It manifested the genius of God to create this machine-making machine that we see in evolution.
But then there's the big why. I mean, it's interesting, but then the question is why? And I think that it's incumbent on Christians who believe in theistic evolution to try to answer the why, because that to me is at the heart of this. I'm so sorry we're out of time. Dr. Michael J. Murray, this has been a joy, and I know it's been a joy because I feel like we've been talking for 5 minutes and we've been talking for closer to 40. Really, if you swing by New York anytime soon, I would really love to just continue what at least for me has been a fascinating conversation. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Folks, thanks for listening. I want to encourage you once again and beg you if necessary. Okay, I'm begging. The Alliance Defending Freedom, these folks are heroes. They do what they do, but they cannot do it without your help. They need you to step up. Go to our website, metaxastalk.com. Give generously. If you want to know how you can help the country, I promise you, if you give to the Alliance Defending Freedom, you're helping the country. It's very important. Our website is metaxastalk.com. Metaxastalk.com, you'll see the banner. Please give generously. This is an important thing that they're doing. They need your help.
Three-star General Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.